to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. And it pleases me to introduce our guest here this morning, James Schlosser. And James has a really great story. I found James on LinkedIn. As most of you know, I find the majority of my hosts on our guests on LinkedIn. It's a great place to find people of like-mindedness. And I saw a number of James' posts, and I immediately was drawn to what he was saying. And likes attract likes. And so my pleasure, James, to have you on our podcast this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Dr. Gordon. It's great to be here.
You bet. And my audience and community is very accustomed to me stepping out of the box of dentistry. Mm-hmm. I bring people on to share stories, their stories in particular, and how they have kind of turned their life and their circumstances around, and what has brought about that, but also the courage and the strength and the imagination to do so. Mm-hmm. And those are things that I'm drawn to, James, in my life, and what I leaned on a lot. And so I'm going to begin by letting you share with us your story. And that's what initially brought me on, was a post that you had shared your story on. So share with them a little bit about something that's outside of dentistry that they can bring in via parts of your story.
Yeah, totally. My name's James. I've been in the roofing industry for going on 6 years now. Growing up, we basically had next to no money for the entirety of my childhood. I would say in the first 13 years of my life, we moved 11 different times for various reasons. A lot of times we spent living with other people, and money was always scarce, and we never knew when life was going to change inside of 30 days, you know, where we were moving states again or something like that. So I had this survivalistic mindset where everything was literally just about survival, just about making the next paycheck. And when I got into my 20s, that kind of continued. You know, I never made more than $18 an hour. I went to community college after high school, mostly because my parents were pressuring me to go to school to get a degree in business, something, whatever, something that would make money. And that's what they thought would make money. And I didn't really know any better. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. So I just kind of did what they said. And I went to 2 years of community college, and it was the biggest waste of time ever. I slept through half my classes. I think my GPA was somewhere around a 2.5. I failed, I think, two or three classes, or I got out before I failed them. So it didn't affect my GPA, but my GPA was already not that good. So I kind of bounced around a lot and eventually just found myself working, making no more than $18 an hour. And again, just survival until the next paycheck. And that's kind of what consumed me. My anxiety was kind of a big part of that. And then when I was 29, I met the woman that I was going to marry. I had been working in a wood shop for 7 years and didn't get paid a whole lot, but I was a part of a really great story and working with really great people. And the biggest thing that I learned when I was there, and I think the impetus for me actually working in this wood shop, was just to learn how to work, how to build a work ethic. It's something that I didn't believe that I had, and I felt like I needed that. So that's kind of what drew me to this wood shop. And I learned a ton of skills there, both in terms of making furniture, but also just in terms of how to work and how to build that work ethic and do things that you don't want to do when you don't want to do them. And so when I was 29, I was getting married, and the pressure was on. Like, I actually really have to focus on making money. And so I ended up in the roofing space. And the first year I was in roofing, I made over six figures. And so this paycheck to paycheck lifestyle that I had lived for my entire life suddenly vanished. It was gone. I paid off my credit cards. I had 6 months of savings. And it was like everything was great. And what happened was that that survivalistic mindset, it didn't really change just because I made money. Money doesn't really change the mindset. It changed the it changes the action. And so what happened was I had all this money, I had all this comfort, and so I just kind of grew into complacency. Work had served its purpose of paying the bills and saving what you could. And, you know, we bought a new truck, we bought a new house, all this great stuff starting out as a family. And I just didn't know what was past that. My mind couldn't think beyond that. And so I just kind of grew into this complacent mindset. Woe is me. I don't know what I want to do with my life. Woe is me. I have all this money. And eventually, life kind of took a turn for us, and we had some issues with our house. We ended up discovering mold, and it was a really bad kind of mold as well. It's something that's very dangerous and can really wreck a person. And so we ended up having to get our house remediated. We moved in with my mom for what we thought was going to be 3 weeks. That turned into 3 months. We drained our savings. I think in that the whole ordeal cost us over $100,000. And I found myself in a place where I was depressed. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but now I also didn't have money. And we also had been living out of the house for a while. And so I found myself back knocking doors like crazy. You know, I've been in the door-to-door space selling roofs to homeowners and helping them through an insurance claims process. So it's something that is really beneficial to homeowners. And I found myself just out there grinding hard again. And literally the survivalistic mindset, when I had money, just brought me back to having no money and back to being in a place where I really needed to fight super hard for it just to survive. And it was in that moment, I remember in the beginning of February, I was on a scooter. I was knocking doors. It was 15 degrees outside. I was freezing my butt off. And I just told myself, if I don't change my mindset, regardless of how much money I make, I'm going to end up back here again, and I have to live for something more. And it was in that moment, John, that I changed this mindset of one from survival to one of abundance. I can't just make it about me. I have to make it about other people. I have other things that I have to do. I have other things that I have to attend to. This isn't my life, and my worth doesn't just come down to making money. And that was a big thing that I kind of had to realize. And so I kind of went into 2021 with this mentality of I'm going to work, and I'm going to work really hard, and I'm going to be the best. I absolutely want to be the best, and I'm going to make back all this money, and I want to thrive. But I have to do it according to a very particular set of values. Work is not the sum of my worth and is not my highest priority. It's not my highest value. I have God, my church, my family, my wife, my marriage, my kids, and all these things that work is supposed to support. I work for that purpose. And when I started to do that, I found myself creating boundaries where I was going to work really hard during the hours that I was going to work. And when I wasn't working, I was just going to do that. I wasn't going to work. I wasn't going to let this idea of like all these clients and all these needs kind of bleed into my time with my family, my time at church, my time with my community, or the guys that I was going to Bible study with. I just wasn't going to let that happen. And in 1 year, I tripled my sales. So I went from literally $1 million in sales to over 3.1 million in revenue in 1 year. I was one of the top roofers in the entire industry. This award that you see behind me is the Golden Door Award, which was given to me through the Door-to-Door Association back in January of this year out in Salt Lake City, Utah. But I got that way literally through having a mindset of abundance, a life not centered around me, but centered around the values, the things that I care most about. And I care so much about very particular things. I want to literally invest into those things like my life depends on it. And so that's just sort of a little snippet of my story and sort of that mindset change, right? The money didn't change the mindset, but the mindset change did impact the money very significantly.
You unwrapped a good number of topics there, James. And, you know, you were talking about your GPA being 2.5 and getting yourself out of some classes that you know you weren't going to succeed in. I mean, that was wisdom there on your part. But, you know, the thing that I look at, James, in listening to your story, and this is what drew me to you, was everything that you just shared is that you have a 4.0 in the aspect of life. And, you know, as we've seen in the past number of years in business and whatever, there's a lot of people that didn't even go to college, didn't even attempt, and they started businesses out of their garages, and they became extremely successful from a monetarily standpoint, we'll say. But the thing that you mentioned also, but those people had a 4.0 in life also. And I think as a 4.0 in their mindset and their attitude, and those are huge. I like the fact that you talked about going from survival to abundance. And it's that scarcity mentality to abundance mentality. And that's truly a mindset that can really set you free. And it sounds like that was a pivotal moment in time for you, was when you took yourself out of that. And you kind of had a come to Jesus moment, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I've got to change here. Share with me a little bit more about that particular point in time and what it took for you to recognize that, collate the information, and then set your course.
Yeah, well, I kind of looked at everything that I had. I had all these possessions. I had the savings and the house and the car, and I had all these things. And then life eventually kind of hit me in the butt pretty hard. And I so sort of saw all those things as being lost. All these things that I had, these things that I was proud of, it's like all that's kind of in passing. You know, they're important things to have, but they're not important things to stake your life on or be like, I identify this particular way because of these particular things that I own or that I've bought or anything like that. It really had to do, I think, more with relationships, right? Like, I'm sitting here investing so much time into work, but how much time am I actually really investing into my marriage or really investing into time with my children? You know, like, those are things that are actually going to have an impact, not just on me, because it's going to help me be a better person, but it's going to impact them. And I have a responsibility for that too. And I think that a lot of times these men or you know, these high-end executive leaders kind of go into life with this responsibility of just like, I have to perform really good at my job, but that's what I have to do. And I'm kind of curious as to why men think that way. You know, as everything kind of boils down to just to like work and performance and income and bonuses and all this kind of stuff without realizing like, look, there's an entire world of other responsibilities that you have. You know, I mean, if the world had good marriages, like if all marriages were good, this entire world would look way different. It would look so much better, you know, but we don't have that. And guys are out there, you know, working hard and they're lonely and their wives are lonely and they're not focusing on the things that they need to at home, which actually do have a chance of leading them towards happiness because making money isn't going to make you happy, and working some job that makes you a bunch of money isn't going to make you happy. You have to look a lot deeper than that. And you have to be vulnerable with yourself too. That's one thing I think that a lot of people don't understand, is that in order to really discover these sorts of things, there's a certain aspect of vulnerability with yourself that you have to have in order to learn what that is.
I'm glad you used that word, because that's the exact word I was thinking about as you were talking there, is that we men, we put up shields and we're supposed to be brave and not show signs of weakness. And vulnerability is looked at, I think, by a lot of people as a sign of potential weakness in an individual. And I believe the opposite of that, James, and I think you do too, just by what you shared, is that vulnerability for me, as I look at it with gentlemen, is an ultimate sign of ultimate courage. Renee Brown, you know, she studied vulnerability and did a TED Talk on it a number of years ago, and it's one of the highest downloaded or viewed TED Talks in the history of TED. And she did a lot of research on the vulnerability. And one of her research moments was that she went to some of the special ops teams in the military and asked them the question about vulnerability. And the specific question that got her attention and the results was she asked the gentleman, I mean, these are the guys, these are the SEALs, the special ops that are put in impossible situations. But in order for them to survive, they have to be the ultimate, ultimate team.
Yeah.
And to be the ultimate team, they have to exercise extreme vulnerability to each other. And so she asked them, is there ever a moment in any of your operations or outside of the operations that you see that vulnerability is not a big part of what you do? And they could not come up with one single situation. Hmm. And here are the guys. So it kind of came, what I was hearing her say is, guys, it's okay to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example too. And I love studying the Navy SEALs because they really take, I think, humanity and strengths and weaknesses, and they just, they push the card so much further than most people do. And there's a lot that you can discover in that that's really beautiful. Something else that came to mind too, and I've seen a couple parents do this when their kids cry. We're actually reading through Little House on the Prairie right now.
Oh, yeah.
To my girls, which is a lot of fun. But one thing that I've seen is this idea of, like, it's bad if children cry. Like, when something happens, when their feelings get hurt or they don't get something that they want. I mean, whatever reason, children cry. And I've seen parents say, stop crying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why stop crying? What's wrong with showing your emotions? And a part of me is wondering if that so many men who are out there think that are emotionally dysregulated is really stemming from the fact that maybe their parents were just like, yeah, don't cry. It's bad to cry. It's bad to show emotions. It's bad to be vulnerable. You know, even as a child, your parents, which is we should be. And that's a stigma that I think has got to stop. It's okay for children to show emotions. You know, children want to be safe, but when you tell them don't cry, what you're telling them is I'm not safe to entrust your emotions to. Because I don't know how to handle that, because I don't know how to handle emotions. And so you have guys that literally are going to be have emotional dysregulation, or they're just going to completely shut it off, and they're just going to do the work, and they're going to, you know, work the job and bring in the income and just sort of let that be that. And this is my worth, and this is what I have to do. And the idea that there could be anything more important than that is I'm just going to shut that off. It's not important. Because vulnerability is a bad thing. Vulnerability is a sign of weakness. And like what you're saying, it's one of our greatest strengths. It is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. When you make yourself vulnerable, you learn so much about your environment. You learn so much about the people around you. And they become curious about you. Because they sense that you don't have, you know, your defenses up, and you're not... Well, you're presenting your true self, bottom line.
Yeah.
And in dentistry, I think that that's something that's really important. But, you know, with medical and in the medical field, we're supposed to know everything and not show that. And I was quite the opposite with my patients because I wanted to know about them. I wanted to sense their emotions with what I did, cosmetic dentistry. And, you know, my purpose was to help people transform their lives by transforming their self-image and their self-values about themselves based upon how they felt about their smile and their teeth.
Yeah.
And I could not engage in that type of dentistry without being vulnerable to them and with them and allowing them to be vulnerable with me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting. Why stop crying is a note I made here. And I think that's a really a good thing is why stop crying. One of my favorite movies, and as you were talking about this, I mean, this movie just immediately came to my mind, James, is We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson. And it's about the first real true battle that the United States had in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And there, this battalion is hit into an impossible situation. and they weren't told about the impossibility of it until after they were in there. And at the end of the movie, when everything was said and done, they won the battle in impossible odds, impossible odds. But there were, Mel Gibson was the chief commander of the battalion, and he was right there front and center with every battle, leading the way. Mm-hmm. And here he is at the end of the battle, and all of the reporters are now coming into the battlefield as things start to shut down. And they're asking him questions, and he's standing there, and he's weeping. And you can tell out of the utter exhaustion, physically and emotionally, but the fact that also that he lost his soldiers, some soldiers, and people that he valued and he cared about. And I thought, you know, this is an awesome. And what it made me do, James, I watched this movie for 10 years straight, and I get to that point, and I always get a lump in my throat, and I want to start crying. I used to, tears used to come down. And so there's great value in honoring your emotions around other people. I think people respect you more because they're seeing the true person who you are. And in turn, you respecting other people's emotions and not telling them, stop crying.
I cannot agree more. I cannot agree more with that. So,
I want to switch gears just a second here. Your last post that you put up about 45 minutes ago today. Again, I'm a fan of your post, and I asked you,
thank you,
when we did an onboarding a couple of weeks ago, who helps you do your post, and you said you do them all. And I thought, good for you, James. You are a thinker. And, you know, you're using your creative imagination, and you're really, you're going deep, and you're going in a great direction with a lot of your posts. And I just love them. Thank you for putting them up there.
Thank you.
But I like the title of your last one here, that you put up this morning, at What Makes High Performers Unique. Speak to me about that.
Yeah. Well, I think when perseverance is one of the things that really comes to mind as far as what makes them unique. So I see a lot of sales reps. I've been in the door-to-door space for, you know, 5 or 6 years. And it's a really hard thing to do. Like, go and knock on somebody's door and try to sell them an idea is a pretty tough thing to do. And I've seen a lot of people come in and either do it, or I've seen do it and fail, or I've seen a lot of people kind of come in, do it, make a lot of money really quickly, and then just kind of be like, okay, I'm good, you know, and not keep going, or not keep pushing themselves, or finding a way to level up. And what I found with the door-to-door industry, I mean, 90% of it is going to be rejections and people not interested in you. And that's kind of sales in general, at least outside sales. And so for me, it's like, what sets these really successful people apart? And I think it's, one, at some point, things are going to get difficult, or things are going to get tough. And when things get tough, you don't just sort of like wallow in self-pity or tell yourself you're not good enough. You just kind of keep going. And you kind of learn as you go. But there's a resilience there. And I think the way in order to back up that resilience is to ask yourself, why am I doing this? For what purpose am I doing this for? And to start doing it for that very specific purpose, or for, you know, and what I teach and what I coach on is literally doing it for a very specific set of values, right? These are the things that I live for. These are the things that mean the most to me. These are the things that are most important to me, and I want to live them. And my work is going to support that, so that when the going gets tough, when you get faced with rejection all the time, you just keep going, because you realize that the prize is not necessarily just in being the top guy in your company or making all these sales. The prize is all in the stuff that's outside of work, you know? And so you kind of keep going for that. And then I think the second thing that makes high performers unique is that, you know, oftentimes you have self-doubt. I'm not good enough. You know, and a lot of times you're getting rejected 90% of the time. There's the question of, I'm not good enough at this. I can't do this long term, or whatever it could be. And I think, you know, that there's value in asking yourself that question, but at the same time, don't doubt to the point where you just stop. You have to have courage in yourself, and you have to believe in yourself that you can do this and that you should do it. And the last thing that I kind of stated is that when you fail, you practice patience and you understand, okay, there may have been some mistakes that I made, but I'm going to get up and keep going. It's this idea of fail forward, right? Failure is never final. Failure is always an opportunity to learn and to get better. And I think those are some very specific highlights that I have in regards to sort of what makes high performers or even just entrepreneurs that are just have been doing this for a while. Yeah. What makes them really, really unique.
Yeah. My listeners, you may have noticed a pause a few minutes ago when I asked James here a moment. And James, you didn't deny your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Your emotions were there for you. And that was the reason to the pause, folks. It wasn't that there was a glitch in our equipment here. Share with them, James, what you were thinking at that moment.
Well, I was looking at my post because I needed to figure out exactly what I had written. I had sort of reflected on it a little bit this morning. But yeah, I mean, I think even in just writing that particular post, it's really hard. Like when you go out there and sell, it's super challenging. And there are oftentimes days that you come back and you're like, yep, didn't make a sale. Yep, nobody was interested. Didn't even talk to anybody today. And it can really feel like failing, but just getting back up and continuing and being consistent with it, even though it seems oftentimes when you're going out there and you're selling, you're getting your teeth kicked in, that there is so much value in that. It's really interesting in the door-to-door space. There was this story of this other guy who had won all these Golden Door awards, and he was like a top, I think it was either Pest or Solar industry that he was in. Just this incredible guy. And everybody wanted to go knock doors with him and just be like, what's the secret sauce? Like, what is he saying that's super unique or super special that like people just like gravitate towards him? And what was really interesting, there was one new kid that ended up being able to go out with this guy and knock with him. It was a super special deal. It was this really big deal, super special time. And he goes out there and they just knock for like 7 or 8 hours. And the guy got rejected about 80% of the time. People not home, people saying no. And he's going out there and he's just like, why am I here? This guy's literally getting rejected all the time. But the really cool thing was that as much as he got rejected, he just kept going. He didn't stop. He's like, okay, awesome. You know, 30 people said no. I'm going to go knock another one. And he just kept going. And I think anywhere in life, anywhere, any position that you're in, if you want to be successful, you have to be consistent. You have to keep going out there. And this can apply to a lot more than just business, right? Like you can apply this to anything that you're really trying to work on, right? Like you're playing the guitar, or you're trying to get better at your basketball game, or you're trying to work on your marriage. You just have to be consistent with it, right? It's the stop and go that keeps you from growing. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this, and then I'm not going to do it for 2 weeks. And then I'm going to do it again and be really intensive about it for a couple of days. And then I'm just sort of going to forget about it for a month, right? Yeah. Like you're not going to get anywhere. It's going to be stagnant. And if it's stagnant, it's probably going to go backwards. And so that consistency is, I think, the number one attribute with high performers. My thing is really, how and why are you going to be consistent at that? And why do you want to be successful? And what are really your motives? What do you really want to live for here?
You know, I like, again, a number of things that you said there. On your LinkedIn bio, you talk about values alignment architect. I like that phrase. Describe to me what you mean by that and what you're doing with that.
Yeah. So basically what I do is I help high achievers, I help top sales performers really just sort of combat the common enemies of burnout and complacency, right? So complacency is one thing. And then burnout is I'm just working so hard. Now I'm just completely burned out. And now it's just done. It's over. And there's this recoup thing that you need. And I've sort of really have taken some time to understand like what's really going on here and what do people actually need. And I think what people really need is they have to understand what it is that they're actually living for. Like, what are their core values? And the way I do that is I ask people very clearly, like, if you had 2 weeks left to live, what would you spend your time on? Like, here you are, you're working your butt off, or you're doing whatever you're doing with your life, and you're not happy, right? It's like you eventually get to this incredible realization that money doesn't make you happy, which we're all sold the lie that money makes you happy, and it's just not true. And so if money doesn't make you happy, then what does? And let's start looking into that. Well, what are the things that you really care about in life? Okay, well, you don't know. Well, if you had 2 weeks left to live, what would you do? Like, you could take two routes with that. You could go to total despair, which, I mean, granted, it would be really hard to hear from a doctor. You've got 2 weeks left to live.
Yeah.
But there would be an investment of something. The biggest gift that we have to offer anybody is our time. And so if you have 2 weeks left to live, what would you do with your time? What would you do with the biggest gift that you have to offer other people, which is your time, which is yourself? And to really start asking themselves that, when we start asking ourselves that, like, actually, this is the thing that I really care about. This is what I'm actually willing to hedge my life on. This is what I really, really, really want to do with my life.
Yeah.
And just to start really investing in that and not just sort of being like, cool, I'll take some time and time block that out. But it's like, no, this is what I'm willing to die for.
Yeah. You know, not many people, James, look at life in that perspective, and they let life dictate who they are and where they are at in their life and their particular path. And I like that, you know, pausing and what are you looking for and where are you spending most of your time? And I know that you're going to understand this next question about purpose, because both of us, we found out, I didn't know you were working in a purpose mastery program as I am.
Yep.
And, you know, they shared with us, and you and I both have gone through this process, is defining your purpose and then making your decisions in your life and in your career. Make your decisions based upon your purpose and let your purpose be your why. And share with me, I didn't ask you on our onboarding, share with me what your defined purpose is as you see it and feel it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, purpose you kind of have to break purpose down into different categories, right? So for me, I think my purpose is to love and serve the Lord. Why am I created and why am I here? Well, that's number one. Number two, I think my purpose is to have a really good marriage and be a really good dad. Like, that would simply just come in number two. Again, like, why am I here? And what am I going to leave behind as well? And then I think past that, my purpose is to really help other people who are either struggling with burnout or dealing with complacency, which I think happens to all of us at some point in life, to really help them audit their life and their time, like, and to be asking those really hard questions of just like, what are you doing with your time and why are you doing it?
Yeah.
And then to really go in there and be like, is this the best version of yourself? Is this leading towards the best version of yourself? And if not, what does it look like to create a model of your life so that you are living that? You are living each moment intentionally, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you're working all the time. And it doesn't mean you're spending all your time just on like very particular things. I do believe in rest and in play and just time to yourself. But at the same time, like, what are we actually living for? Because I think that most people are just kind of out there going through the motions of living through life without actually asking themselves, what am I really here for?
Yeah.
You know, because it's a scary question and it's a hard question to ask because we don't know the answer to it. And that puts us in a place of uncertainty and vulnerability that we'd rather not face. But the thing is that I think our happiness and our peace and our joy lie on the other side of those questions.
I agree. I like that. You know, it's obvious that there are a lot of people that are burned out on life. Suicide is at an all-time high, not just in the United States, but in the world. You know, the pandemic didn't do us any favors in that situation. And I know in the dental field, I think upwards of 80 to 90% of all dentists experience burnout and ask the question, why am I still practicing dentistry? Or they don't see any joy or fulfillment in it. Yeah. And I think, James, the power of having a significant purpose in one's life really becomes your compass. And it keeps you focused and it keeps you heading in the right direction. And if you have that purpose, you can always reflect back upon it and gain strength from it, gain courage to take the next step and keep yourself moving in the direction that really you need to be moving in personally in order to make a difference in the world around you, the people around you, in the way that you see is correct for you. In what your number one statement that you made is love and serve the Lord.
Yep.
And I think our God and Lord asks us and wants us to serve each other. And you know, I think that's a great purpose. That's a great number one value in your purpose.
It's also like the second most important thing according to Jesus. You know, love and serve the Lord with all your, you know, heart, mind, soul, and then love your neighbor like yourself. It's literally the second thing.
Yep.
Like, go out there and take care of each other.
And I have a feeling he's a pretty good resource, isn't he?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Tongue in cheek. So, James is there. Let's bring this around home. And is there any last thought that you want to drop on the audience and leave with them?
Yeah. I mean, I know to a lot of people listening, maybe there's that question of just like, what am I supposed to do? Or you're kind of looking or you're researching as far as like, who am I and what am I really here for? I've been through this so many times of just asking myself these questions. And I really found, I think that the biggest thing is just to look at your surroundings, take audit of your life and ask yourself, what are the things that actually mean the most to me? And then how do I use those things to actually be a whole person? Because when you are a whole person, when you are living life to the fullest, everything around you changes. You become a much more attractive person. So even in like a professional setting, you know, what I found for me is like I tripled my sales in 1 year, not by working three times as hard, you know, but by being super intentional with the people that I was around. And so, this is kind of what I do. I coach people and I help people to discover what their values are and then to start implementing that into their lives and to allow that to be the access point, even for the way they make decisions, you know? Yeah. And so for me, you know, I would love to have the opportunity, if this is something that you really resonate with, even just to jump on a call and just say, hey, like, where are you and how can I help? Because that's something that I'm really passionate about. So, yeah.
The invitation is out there, isn't it, James?
Yes, sir. There it is.
I will put your contact information at the bottom of our show notes.
Great.
Is What would be the best way for them to connect with you, though, James?
Yeah, sure. So you can reach out to me on a DM, either LinkedIn or Instagram, or you can shoot me an email, which is info@jamesschlosser.com.
Okay, very good. Well, James, I appreciate you being on today. As I mentioned, I really like to step outside the box of dentistry. Mm-hmm. I think the soft skills of life, soft skills of communication are the way that succeed. I believe that you tripled your sales that 1 year
Yeah.
because of that process. You changed your mindset, you improved your soft skills about life, and it was reflective of that. Don't necessarily need to work harder, just work smarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, life will come back to you in ways that are just magical.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, again, I appreciate you being on with us today, James. And that is our episode today. James Schlosser is my guest, and I am your host, Dr. John.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more Fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.